I think we've all heard teams are like the perfect petri dish for all of your family of origin stuff to just replay itself. You know, we can say high performing teams, but like, I like the words conscious teams. Like, conscious teams, are you guys consciously creating together? And I think the biggest thing that gets in the way is just facets of your ego, because we all have three core basic human needs, if not a few more: the need for approval, the need to belong, the need to feel safe, and the need for some level of control. And then you have layers and layers, as we're adults, layers and layers and layers of stuff that you've experienced. And so then you get thrown into a dynamic with like 8 to 10 other people, and all that just plays out in full form. So like, I like to, as quickly as possible, get teams talking about what it is that they're most scared of. And when you peel back the onion, usually, and you peel it back, peel it back, peel it back, it's always the same stuff. I'm scared of not being seen. I'm scared of not being liked. I'm scared of not being accepted. I'm scared that you're going to find out that I really don't know my shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the same stuff. Like, the game is really irrelevant. The game of winning, the game of climbing, the game of posturing, the game of politics, the game of putting aside who you are for who you need to be, the game of what's expected of you. I think I've always been a real depth-oriented person, and I've been on my own life journey of development. And I think as time and life unfolds, you start asking yourself what's real and what's not. And so there were absolutely versions of myself where it felt very like on the ladder and buttoned up. And, you know, I hit that mountain. I was a chief HR officer for a company, and you realize that that's not the glory that you seek. And the glory that you seek is actually really learning who you are and all the different aspects of who you are and how you relate to people and the authenticity by which you relate. And that's what it's about. And even in the context of organizations, big, small, or whatever, like, that's why we exist, not to play the game.
You are allowed to be whole. Allowed.
When you were born, you were whole, perfect. And somewhere along the way, you learned that parts of you were not allowed here. What are the pieces of you that you've put into the basement? The parts of you that we cannot see anymore, or that you cannot even remember? And how can you reclaim the wholeness that is your birthright? I'm Dr. Camille Joyce, and I'm here to join you in exploring these questions and many more you didn't even know you were allowed to ask. You are allowed to grow. You're allowed to dream. You are allowed to be exactly who you are and to become the next version of who you want to be. Start your journey of exploration with me right now on Allowed.
Hi, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Dr. Camille Joyce, and this is Allowed. I'm joined today by my beautiful friend and sometimes collaborator. We coach together, we consult together. This is Miss Anjani Bhargava. Good morning, my sweet.
Good morning.
So I'd love if you could tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words.
I've had just kind of a varied tapestry of background. So I'm an organizational psychologist by design, or by start. I've worked with Fortune 100 companies in executive roles, and then intersperse that with various bits of different types of consulting. And now I'm an executive coach working with CEOs and their teams of any stage companies, startups, high growth, or even Fortune 500.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do know about you and your work is that when I hear those words of Fortune 100 and executive coaching, consulting, it sounds, I think, a little more buttoned up than I experience you. And, to me, you bring so much like depth and heart and soul into your work. It's a little less traditional than I think it might sound from the outside. Can you talk about how you developed into this version of who you are right now?
Such a great question, because I I ask myself that question too. I think I've always been a real depth-oriented person, and I've been on my own life journey of development. And I think as time and life unfolds, you start asking yourself what's real and what's not. And so there were absolutely versions of myself where it felt very like on the ladder and buttoned up. And, you know, I hit that mountain. I was a chief HR officer for a company. And you realize that that's not the glory that you seek. And the glory that you seek is actually really learning who you are and all the different aspects of who you are and how you relate to people and the authenticity by which you relate. And that's what it's about. And even in the context of organizations, big, small, or whatever, like that's why we exist, not to, you know, play the game. Like the game is really irrelevant.
And the game of winning?
The game of anything, the game of winning, the game of climbing, the game of posturing, the game of politics, the game of putting aside who you are for who you need to be, the game of what's expected of you.
It's so beautiful because I see the connection of everything you're sharing with the very way that you actually do help teams to win the game. And it's like there's a paradox there. It's you kind of are coming in through the human side to in a very beautifully structured way that we're going to get into to really create high performance team environments and high performing leaders. So I want to talk more about the nitty gritty of that. And first, I want to just share a story. So I mean, last night we exchanged a few Voxers. So Anjani and I, for the listeners, we're working on a project together right now for a client. And Voxer is this app where you can leave each other these really long, up to 15 minute long voice messages. We love it. We use it all the time. It's a great way to have an asynchronous conversation, but it feels synchronous because it's someone's voice in a very relaxed tone, just like you'd have in a conversation. So sometimes because Anjani's in Chicago, here I am in Los Angeles, we're working on projects, we've both got little kids, we don't want to schedule meetings, we don't need to schedule. So this is how we, you know, share ideas, ask questions, get feedback, challenge each other. So last night, we were sharing some notes about this project. And I remember you sharing something with me about what might be going on in my own coaching. And this is something that you've done for me really frequently. And I experience it as a combination of like supporting and coaching me. But also there's a way that you really challenge me. And, you know, our backgrounds are different in many ways. And you've spent much more time in corporate environments, and I've spent much more time in smaller startups. So your perspective, I love your confidence in how you direct me. But last night we're sharing this exchange, and I'm, by the way, guys, I'm like in the middle of like the most chaotic move process ever. I've moved locations with my family like a couple times in the last couple of weeks. We're dealing with like remodeling. It's just, you know, we're in a rental. Literally, I rearranged my studio this morning. So it's a bit like crazy over here. Like the past two nights when we've been sharing these notes, I've been like, I just can't like even put together a coherent thought at this time of night.
And it's usually like at 10 o'clock my time, 8 o'clock your time.
Yeah. And we're like, after the kids to bed. Yeah. So we're tired. So, you know, but what you shared is maybe you need to drive the conversation more. And I think I responded to all the parts of your Vox except for that comment. But when I woke up this morning, it was like ringing in my ears, and I'm like, that's the truth. And I don't even know how you know that, because you have never been in those conversations. How do you know it?
I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said for intuitive knowing, but also like Kunal, I think where you and I also connect is we're both scientists. We've both gone for our doctorate. You finished yours, right? I did not. But like we're oriented that way. So like give me a bunch of fluff stuff without any tie back to science. And I really struggle, right? But on this one, the intuitive nature, I've been thinking about that a lot, and it makes sense. Like I think that I can see that because I've had all these different experiences, right? I sit on boards of startup companies. I have worked with Fortune 500 boards. I have worked with big teams, small teams. So like all that stuff is in my brain as disparate information. And just the patterns of how our brains work, right? Neurons that wire together, fire together. Like that's my sciencey side. It just zaps together because of all these experiences that form this tapestry. And so I have a way of just seeing, and I wouldn't call it intuitive seeing, like some kind of weird thing that I'm not in control of, but this like projecting outward of if this, then that, if this, then that. And I think that's what it is. And I think the other thing that I pride myself on, and I'm sure everyone else does this, but this is just for me, is when I work with, whether it's an individual, a team, or an entity, the minute I decide to start working with them, they get all of me all the time, right? And so my objective is to be in full service all the time, always.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think just that mindset creates this, like, I'm almost a part of them. I don't know. That's the best I can explain it.
You think you're choking up almost.
No, it's just, I don't know how else to put it into words. Yeah. Like, it means so much to me to be a part of their experience and a part of their journey. And as coaches, you know, we have to be careful of that because we are, as a prior podcaster of yours, David, as he says, self is instrument, right? People aren't paying for our genius or our wisdom or even our ability to ask questions. They're paying for us and the energy we bring and the space that we hold.
So our being and not just our doing.
Yeah. Very well said. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Diana Chapman taught me about these two pillars of coaching. And the first pillar is the being, is how you be. And the second pillar is all of your technologies, your tools, your frameworks, your question asking craft, all
content
of that.
Content versus context. Right?
Totally. That's something else I feel like I've learned from you in the past couple of months is just allowing myself to surrender more, even more of myself and less time boxing of it and much more just what's needed. What's needed now?
That's something that I've learned from you because I remember when we first started working together, it's like, okay, what are we doing and what do we need to plan for? And you beautifully said, you're like, no, we do the dance together and we're so comfortable with each other that it's just going to organically flow and play out. And like, I have no need to plan. And it was the first time that anyone's ever said that to me, right? Like, we don't need to plan. It doesn't matter. Throw it all up in the air because that's just not what it's about. So I'm going to use your word. Like you've allowed me to rest into that. And the times when we do that, it's beautiful. Every time.
I think it may have to do with our personality types too, that works well for us. And it doesn't feel good to a lot of people to work that way. So it's a requirement because I find that when I overplan, I really cramp myself, not because my plans are wrong, but because the energy of planning is antithetical to how I show up. Thinking I can predict where something is going to go and that my prediction is going to be more in service than being present with what actually is going on, that doesn't work for me personally. So whenever I've overplanned something, it doesn't go very well. And I overcomplicate, I feel a sense of time pressure and I need to kind of rigidly kind of force things and control the flow of a conversation. You know, specifically, we're talking about working in intimate, you know, intense coaching settings with high level executives. So they know what they're doing and they lead us just as much as we lead them.
Totally.
There's just such a wisdom.
Some people would call that mastery. That is mastery. Right? When you don't need to come in with all your slides and papers and
it sure is nice that you have that stack of excellent slides, though, in your back pocket for whenever we need them.
Back pocket. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Yeah. So let's get into high performance teams. What does that mean? Why does it matter whether or not you are a leader on a formal team? What is that about in a broader human sense?
I think that people want to be in community with other people. And even those of us that like to alone ourselves from time to time, and as a four, as fellow fours, we know what that feels like.
Yeah.
We want to be in community, especially with people who we think we can do things with. And so when you're in a team, whether your team's your family or your work colleagues, your spiritual friends, like you feel seen, you feel heard, you feel accepted, you feel invited, you feel like you have the ability to act through your genius, right? Doing that in isolation is far more limiting than doing it with others.
Yeah.
And so I look at team as broadly as that, of just being in community. And I think humans are wired to be in community. And when we don't feel like we're wired to be in community, because for many, many, many years, and you'll hear me saying this, I like to alone myself. Part of that is my foreness. And part of that is just, you know, for years and years and years, I didn't find my people and my community. And so then you get burned, right?
Yeah. I love that framing, that it's about that, that basic fundamental human need to be in community. Steven Pinker talks about the role of language in the human mind and in how we evolved to be able to encode thoughts and concepts, like abstract concepts, things that are not in the here and now, but talking about things that aren't here and aren't now, and maybe never were. Maybe you're just purely imaginary right now because they're an idea about the future. Like, we can encode all of that into language to communicate with each other. And that this actually is takes up a massive amount of our caloric daily intake is to create language using our mind. But the specific purpose of language is so that you and I can coordinate action, that we can work together. And if we actually couldn't as human beings, we would perish individually and as groups.
I love that.
Isolation is a disease. It is a crippling disease that does not work for the human system, because we are actually, in my view, we're actually not individual organisms the way that we often talk about it.
Right.
The health of me impacts the health of my whole family and vice versa, because actually the human unit, the human being, is a communal being. Like, teams are actually deeply encoded into our DNA. And this the problems that we run into when we go into organizations and try to work in teams, like, the thing I love about this work that you and I are so blessed to get to do and working with people, is it presents you with all of these very fundamental human dilemmas and challenges. That it's every time you start a new team or a new company, a new venture, it's a new opportunity to discover more ways that you can grow and learn as a complete human being.
I love so much about that. And what comes up for me is, you know, the three kind of planes that we work on. You can have your IQ, you can have your EQ, but then there's so much also to be said for BQ and that energy exchange. And
what's
we
BQ?
Know,
body what's, intelligence. So EQ, BQ.
Body intelligence. So body intelligence.
EQ, emotional intelligence.
So I kind of talk about it as IQ is like how fast those neurons fire, right? And the connectivity of those neurons. EQ is your own awareness of your own emotion and that of others. And BQ is being tapped into your body and the energy of your body. And what's so interesting to me about that is there's so much research now that proves that you can change people's complete states by the way that you show up. So yeah, we are absolutely connected, right? It's like the trees and the root system of the trees, and they're all intertwined and they speak to each other. You know, it doesn't have to be verbal. Like, there's an energy exchange. And my energy and your energy can co-create to amplify or to completely shift and pivot.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, so this reminds me of when we first met. and we've debriefed on this before. Explain what that was like for you, and I'll give my version and why this is connected.
You mean when we were staring at each other?
Yeah.
That exercise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was crazy, right? Because what was the prompt? The prompt was just stare at each other, look at each other, and show the other person, not by your words, but with your hands, whether your energy is going up or your connectedness, like your mm-hmm. connectedness is going up or down, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point, because I do have so much love for you, and I always have, like that was just the words that I was shooting out through my eyes. And mm-hmm. we weren't even like fully looking at you. It was just eye gazing. And I remember your hand just kept going up and up and up and up mm-hmm. and up. And you were brought to tears. And
yeah.
There were no words exchanged.
And it's just, I could feel so much love mm-hmm. in you. Mm-hmm. And we knew of each other before that happened, but that was the first time we got to be together in like an embodied physical mm-hmm. real world. My yeah. body in the same place as your body.
Yeah. It didn't even feel like there was a separation.
I think there was always a magnetism though, which mm-hmm. is really interesting. You know, mm-hmm. when you think about, you know, who can I create with? Mm-hmm. And that's who I want to be my team. You know, whether you're technically on my team in some kind mm-hmm. of formal written sense or you're on my team.
Right.
You know, and I just always knew you were on my team. And it was this very natural, instinctive, there's a sexual energy to it, mm-hmm. like a recognition of this is a person with whom I can create.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And create in a way that we don't even yet like fully maybe understand or know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And like you just give into that. And I think if you asked people to find a memory where they've experienced that, I think everyone's experienced that if they allow themselves to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But like most people are so guarded and mm-hmm. so like, nope, don't hurt me, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's also we really tamp down in our, especially in our business society, but we really mm-hmm. tamp down on sexual energy in general.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just the energy of creativity.
Creation.
Mm-hmm. It involves curiosity. It involves mm-hmm. inspiration, energy, mm-hmm. drive. Mm-hmm. Like there's a spark of moving forward with something and something growing mm-hmm. from you and in you. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of these five, you know, Anjani and I, you know, both of us are trained in conscious leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And in conscious leadership, and we've talked about this on previous episodes around emotions. There are, you know, we like to talk about these five basic emotions. There's joy, mm-hmm. fear, sadness, anger, mm-hmm. and what I say in a first meeting in a corporate setting, it would be desire.
Mm.
And desire is a code name for sexual feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I say creative energy.
Creative energy. That's great. I might snag that one. But this is such a basic thing. You know, I taught my son's, like when my son was in preschool, I came and taught his class about these five things. And, you know, we talked about mm-hmm. desire and mm-hmm. he wanted an emoji for each feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So for desire, we landed on, it's like a spiral. It's like a swirl.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Everything needs an emoji.
I guess so. I guess so.
So in teams, mm-hmm. sometimes it doesn't feel like what you and I have just described that we mm-hmm. often experience with each other. Often we haven't specifically chosen our teammates. Sometimes we mm-hmm. join an intact team. Sometimes mm-hmm. teammates are brought in. We didn't choose them.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the challenges that people experience on teams in your experience?
So many. I think the first thing, so, you know, I think we've all heard teams are like the perfect petri dish for all of your family of origin stuff to just mm-hmm. replay itself, right? Mm-hmm. I do believe that. So, you know, we can say high performing teams, but like I like the words conscious teams. Like conscious teams, are you guys consciously creating together? And I think the biggest thing that gets in the way is for people who haven't done their work, just facets of your ego, because right, I'm sure you've talked about this in prior podcasts, but we all have three core basic human needs, if not a few more: the need for approval, the need to belong, and the need to feel safe, and the need for some level of control. And then you have layers and layers, as we're adults, layers and layers and layers of stuff that you've experienced and your mental map of what's safe and unsafe in the world. And so then you get thrown into a dynamic with like 8 to 10 other people, and all that just plays out in full form, right? Yes. And it's like, we use the word posturing. Teams posture all the time. Well, why are they posturing? They're posturing because at the end of the day, parts of their ego gets rattled and they're scared. Mm-hmm. There's something that they're scared of.
Mm-hmm. Is this related to projection?
Mm-hmm.
Are we projecting those family dynamics onto the team? And it's really within us, but we see it out there.
Totally. Totally. So like I like to, as quickly as possible, get teams talking about what it is that they're most scared of. And when you peel back the onion, usually, and you peel it back, peel it back, peel it back, it's always the same stuff.
Hmm.
I'm scared of not being seen. I'm scared of not being liked. I'm scared of not being accepted. I'm scared that you're going to find out that I really don't know my shit.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. So there's that imposter syndrome mm-hmm. that definitely shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So common. We did an episode on imposter syndrome recently, and it's one of the ones that my clients have been most impacted by, mm-hmm. I think, because that mm-hmm. universal human experience of I'm pretending mm-hmm. so that I can feel safe, and I'm scared that you're going to mm-hmm. find out. That was episode 53, and I'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
But I see that showing up and these family dynamics showing up.
Yeah.
And there are different stages of teams kind of falling apart. You know, for anyone who's been through something like that, it can be a gut-wrenching experience mm-hmm. to have mm-hmm. a team that used to be working together fall apart because of all those kind of shadowy, egoic mm-hmm. projections mm-hmm. that are just part of us being human.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the final thing that crumbles is trust. Or sometimes the first thing that crumbles is trust.
I was going to say, you think it's the final thing or the first? So
I think if you don't have the trust,
yeah,
then you can't build up to being a high functioning, high performing team.
No. Right.
If trust gets broken, everything falls apart for sure. But it's totally in that eroding process of, we sort of stop challenging each other. We stop showing up for each other. Yeah. And maybe norms get developed and it's not personal. But eventually that kind of task-related conflict quickly falls into, now it's personal. Now this is about our relationship. Now this is about you.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm up all night and there's no mm-hmm. trust left.
Mm-hmm. Well,
once there's no trust left, what do you do?
But let's talk about trust, right? It's like, I think trust is such an ambiguous thing, and yet it's so easy to understand, right? Mm-hmm. It's so big, yet so simple. And it's a formula. Right. Mm-hmm. Like there's a couple of things that go into it, and it's just so like blatantly obvious, you know, when we talk about it, it's, do I think you're credible for your mm-hmm. job or for your position? The way I see you, do I see you as credible? Are you reliable? So can mm-hmm. I count on you? And are you authentic so that I can have like a relationship where I don't have to wonder?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that can go to naught if I think that you are more concerned about you than us, right? So it's, do I think your credibility plus reliability plus authenticity divided by my perception of your self-interest? And if that is a zero, everything goes to zero.
If I perceive that you're not...
I perceive that you care more about you than you care about us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So like, think about all the examples, and I'd invite your listeners to do this too. Think about somebody that you, even if it's like your gut screaming at you, like, I don't know if I can trust this person. Why? Yeah. And if you break it down into those four simple elements, you will see which one of those is being violated for you. And then you have a choice. What do I go do with that? Because I can sit and stew on that.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is where another thing that you and I love can be utilized. Clearing. I can go clear.
Mm-hmm.
I can go reveal myself.
Mm-hmm.
I can go find out if these stories that I'm holding are actually true or not.
let's give a footnote on what is a story. We have a whole mm-hmm. episode on fact versus story, mm-hmm. Episode 46, which we'll link to. And also related to that is the idea of speaking unarguably. Mm-hmm. So instead of claiming my story is truth and it's a fact, can I take ownership that I made up a story? Mm-hmm. I keep telling myself a story. Mm-hmm. Or even I have a story, which is, I like that one a little bit less because it takes less responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I think to be authentic, it requires a tremendous amount of personal responsibility.
Yeah.
Because it's not authentic for me to ignore, you know, who is the one having these thoughts about you or about mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. That's me. I'm mm-hmm. the one having those thoughts. Mm-hmm. It's not a truth that's out there and is objective. Where do dynamics like blame mm-hmm. and judgment, where do those fit in to that trust equation?
So I think blame and judgment are outcomes. So if I don't mm-hmm. trust you, or if something's being violated, like I don't even like saying, I don't trust you, because mm-hmm. I'd rather get to what part of this is, you know, do I feel unsafe in, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. If I feel unsafe that you're not credible in your role, I'm feeling fear that we're not going to be able to accomplish what we need to accomplish together. I'm feeling fear that I'll have to take more than 100% responsibility. So mm-hmm. then if I sit on that and if I don't reveal, then I'm now losing authenticity because mm-hmm. I'm unwilling mm-hmm. to reveal myself. And then I shift below the line and go into blame, mm-hmm. go into resentment, go into criticism, mm-hmm. all of those things.
And it can be so subtle. It's so very, very common. Mm-hmm. So one thing I've heard leaders say a lot when there's that kind of a situation. So this mm-hmm. person's not good at their job. I don't mm-hmm. trust them. Mm-hmm. I don't trust them. If I relied on them, I wouldn't trust it and I would feel all this fear. So I'm not going to. None of that is wrong, okay? We make assessments of each other's credibility in certain areas and we make our own choices about where we want to engage and collaborate and where we don't. Those are mm-hmm. our choices to make. However, what I've heard as the reason not to have the clearing that you mm-hmm. were talking about earlier mm-hmm. and not to reveal that authentically mm-hmm. is I just don't want to take the time to do that. I don't have time for mm-hmm. all of the reactivity and drama and like mm-hmm. that person's going to get offended and then we're going to have to talk about that. And is it possible to move forward from there? How do you help teams where that's just such an entrenched dynamic? I mean, it's so, so common.
So you got to make a choice. Right. And I think this is where the team leader is critical, because if the value is placed on we are only going to win whatever you're winning, trying to win towards, if we are a true team, if we're a first team, then the priority becomes being a team mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. the output of what the team is doing. Like what's actually more important is, are we a team? And there's certain teams that say that. There's certain leaders that say that. They're like, I don't really care. Yeah, you know, we're not going to sacrifice the business, but I don't really care about the short-term wins if we're not doing it correctly. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. I'm going to bank on the long-term win, which is going to be so much better and so much richer if we unite as one, you know, mm-hmm. as a first team.
Mm-hmm. First team.
First team. So first team versus second team or third team. So how many leaders, when we ask them, who's your team? Mm-hmm.
They usually will talk about the people who report to them.
My team. Yes. My team. Right. And, you know, what if, and then we say, well, what if that was your second team? What if the first team was the team that you're on?
Meaning?
The team that you are a player on, not the team that you lead.
The executive team, the leadership team, the management team, whatever level.
Whatever. The team that you are a player on with
other peers.
People that are peers.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. that's what you get paid to do. You get paid to lead your team, but really the influence and how you're going to move things forward is this, not siloed, you know, parenting.
Yes. Yeah. So what does an organization look like where that is actually what's happening versus mm-hmm. the opposite, where people mm-hmm. consider their team to be the team under them.
Mm-hmm. I think everything gets discussed at the team that you're on, especially mm-hmm. if it's the executive team. There's alignment there. People put all their cards on the table. Things don't get held back. They're not posturing for their team and their wins. They're sharing talent. They're not mm-hmm. hoarding their talent. They're talking. I use the word altitude a lot. They're rising in altitude and talking about the right conversations that are mm-hmm. hard. And they're making decisions together. And they're supporting each other. So they're mm-hmm. never saying, well, I didn't really want to do this anyways, but
Right. A thread I'm hearing there is they're not competing with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're not competing with each other. However, at some point, there will be an opportunity to promote someone. Mm-hmm. And there's a budget mm-hmm. and allocation happens across mm-hmm. the whole organization. Mm-hmm. You know, in a family setting, this would look like there are a lot of tasks to get done and there's a certain amount of money in the bank and there's a certain amount of time. How do we choose who gets to spend what? How do we choose who does what around the house? Like that coordination of resources is what I'm referencing here. So what does that look like in a team where people are not competing?
Well, if you're not competing, then you're not trying to tear each other down.
So what are people making decisions in service of, if not themselves?
The business.
Yeah.
The role, the outcome, the, you know, like in a family setting, who gets the money? You know, who gets to go buy whatever they want, right? I don't know. Does it have to be that question? Could it be mm-hmm. a different question where it's what are we trying to create based yeah. on our values? Maybe mm-hmm. none of us spend that money. Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. the money goes in the bank. Maybe mm-hmm. we go and don't buy anything. And maybe we go have an experience together.
Yeah.
Right. Or as a team, what's the role that, you know, is open and there's only one role and we want to promote from within? Mm-hmm. Well, who's the best person for that role? Mm-hmm. And if you truly looked inside, right, if you're a conscious team and there's no competition and stuff, if you truly looked inside, you would be happy if you got it, and you would be just as happy if your peer got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's what's most in service
yeah.
of us achieving our mission and realizing that vision.
Yeah.
This is why vision is just so critically important,
yeah. Yeah.
not just for alignment, but also for establishing trust.
Yeah.
Without a clear vision of this is where we're trying to go, this is that the juiciest carrot hanging out in front of us that we've ever seen in our whole entire lives. Mm. And we are willing to put that before ourselves because we want it to exist so badly, but we cannot create it on our own. So once that vision is like really set and held and clear, and there are different levels of clarity, we can talk about that in another episode, but mm-hmm. clear enough that it actually can unite us without needing to debate each and everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It removes so many of those little windows where competition sneaks in mm-hmm. or I don't understand what's happening over there mm-hmm. and I think my role is more important than yours. Mm-hmm. All of those little chances where trust does begin to crumble once that sneaks in.
Yeah. And sometimes I think vision doesn't actually have to be the vision that inspires you doesn't have to be the vision of the company that you're part of.
Say more.
I think sometimes it's totally great and totally okay. Not okay, great. If the vision that you're aspiring to is the vision of the team, like the collective. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you and I. Do I really care about going and like doing more work together and the work itself and yeah. like achieving that? I do when I think about being in service of my clients, mm-hmm. right? And why I spend time doing what I do. I don't as it relates to you and I.
So interesting.
The vision for you and I is just this energy exchange, that this craziness that you and I have, right?
Yeah.
And that is what the vision is, mm-hmm. not the output of what we do.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. Completely. Yeah. And I can see how that applies to companies as well, that we have a vision of becoming this kind of a company.
Yeah.
It's not just about the product we're putting out in the world or our innovations or our stock price, you know.
Yeah.
God forbid. It's about the kind of company we want to be, you know, to put a mark on the world and to hold this container of human beings who cares about it.
Yeah. Or I care so much about the people that I work with and I learn so much from them. I love being in community with them. Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to who do we want to be, not just what do we want to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being 100%. Not doing. Anjani, I love skimming around all these topics about teams. And I feel like in this episode today, what's really coming through for me is just the critical humanness of teamwork and how fundamental it is and how worth it is for us to lean into any challenges that we face in teamwork because of how critical that learning is for us as humans. Mm-hmm. You know, just you have such a vibe, like a healer vibe. And I really see that happening, you know, with people that we work with, is there's a real opportunity to have like a reconciliation with some of your deepest wounds and some of your biggest insecurities. And so I really, really appreciate you and your way of understanding the world and how much love you put into being of service. And thank you so much for being here today.
Can I say one more thing?
You betcha.
For teams that are not business teams, like family teams, I think one of the most important things is the same vision that you're talking about. Who do we want to be as an entity, as a family, like the most important team? And like I have two little kids, and from a really early stage, like I think they were like three or something, we created family values of like who we wanted to show up in the world as. And I did it just kind of like as I was probably frustrated about something they were doing. I just like wrote it out, but it's simple. And it's just like what we would do in an organization. Like it's the culture of our family and it's simple. It's respect my body, respect my earth, respect my parents, respect my friends, and respect my house.
Wow.
It's so simple, right? And we're always checking each other on that. And then above that sits like a, you know, team Bhargava. Who do we want to be in this world? Like, what's our purpose? But like those values are so critical. And it's like the binding force, right? Like, and when my girls, you know, are released into the world, they will forever, like, this is their root system.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Thank you. So, you know, we can talk about teams in any capacity and like families are teams.
Yeah.
And families have culture. So
100%. So Anjani, if our listeners want to get in touch with you about coaching or teamwork or any of the executive and cultural development work you do, what's the best way for them to follow you and find you?
I'm going through a website refresh right now. So the best thing is to find me on LinkedIn or through the Evolution website.
Great. So that's evolution.team. And we'll put a link into the show notes so that you can get in touch with her and follow her and hear an announcement when the new website's ready. I'm excited for that. And also I've been through that before and that's it's a doozy. Talk about ego work. So great. Thank you so much for being here today. Listeners, Anjani is one of the types of coaches who is going to be invited to offer live interactive coaching sessions to you. All you need to do is join our brand new membership, and you can learn more about that at allowedpodcast.com or kaneel.com/yes. Link to that is in the show notes. And if you enroll very soon, you have an opportunity to become a founding member, lock in your price for life, and really have a big hand in co-creating and shaping the culture of that growing community. So I really hope that you can join us for that and get to have some live coaching with me, with the others who listen to the show and care about the things you do, and with other brilliant coaches such as Anjani herself. So I will invite you to that. and get in touch with you soon. Thank you so much for being here today and taking the time to share your wisdom and your heart. And listeners, whenever you take time to invest in yourself, your own personal exploration and discovery, your own growth, you really are doing something good for the world and the world of people around you. And you're doing something good for yourself. So give yourself a little connection. Love is so critically important, as we talked about today. So thank you for being connected, and we'll see you next week.